Hello, listeners. It's Level Up with Danny. I'm your host, Danny Stockham. Guess what? It's episode 10. We've made it to double digits. So the show that was scheduled for today was intense. It came with a trigger warning. It was an entire hour discussion on suicide. However, that is not today's show anymore. My special guest had a family conflict, and we have rescheduled the episode for March 20th. So, I found this out Sunday night or Monday, I can't remember, but I had nothing in the hopper. It was the show that we had prepared, and that was it. So I was asking around to my family for suggestions, you know, what should I talk about? I don't know what to do. I don't have any ideas. And after some discussions, I came up with two ideas, but I didn't love either one of them, so I'm going to do both of them. So, if you remember, I started this radio show as a way to talk about my personal wellness journey and a way to discuss other wellness journeys, other paths to wellness, all of the componentry that goes into charting a course for wellness, and maybe introducing my listeners to some new wellness stuff, a way to level up your wellness. Well, that's still what the show is about. But today I'm going to talk about something that's not in my current wellness practice. Well, actually, it kind of is about wellness. I'm going to talk about the three loves, the three big loves that most people have. I'm going to talk about mine, and then I'm also going to talk about my book, which I talked about a little bit on the last show because I need to get this book published. And I'm taking a writing class in order to get me to the point of publishing it. My sister actually said, why don't you just read a chapter on the radio show, like read a chapter every time you're on the show or something. And I was so struck by this, like, whoa, that's so revealing. I could never do that. But if I'm going to publish a book that hopefully people are going to read, whatever it is that I don't want to read aloud is going to be read by people. So that was a weird conflict in my brain that I needed to work through. So today, I'm going to do the two topics. I'm going to talk about the three loves that everyone gets, and I'm going to read a chapter from my book. Are we ready? Talk about yourself. Okay. So according to the theory of your three loves, loosely translated, it means that your first love is just that, your first love. Your second love is your learning love. It's your lesson love, and it's your love that teaches you all the lessons and gives you all the learning that you need to prepare you for your final, third, forever love. Well, my first love was from sixth grade to my junior year in high school. This love was pure and exciting and deep and meaningful, and the language that we used in sixth, seventh, 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th grade was forever language. And when you're in those grades and at those ages, forever seems like it's right here, right where you're living. But this forever was a long time ago, like 42 years ago when it ended. His name was Jeff, and our love, my first love, endured a move from Ohio to Tucson, Arizona after my sophomore year in high school. So we kept up the long-distance romance as well as we could. He came to visit me, and I think I went back once to Ohio to visit him, but I might be confusing that with another time that I went back to Ohio when we were actually broken up. So don't quote me on that one. But some of my Ohio friends are definitely going to weigh in. Anyway, we were in love, and it was moon, spoon, June, as they used to say, and there was never a reason to believe we weren't going to be together forever, except that we were 17 and we were not going to be together forever because I lived 3,000 miles away from him and he was missing out on things and I was missing out on things and we were trying to maintain this relationship in deference to the lives we were actually living. So the mature thing to do was to break up. So I did. I broke up with him. I know that it was devastating. It was devastating for me, but I knew it was the right thing to do. And I don't have a single bad thing to say about Jeff. He's a wonderful human being. He's happily married. He's a father, a successful doctor, and he's about to be a grandfather. He did fine. He might still think of me as that young girl, but I'm not her anymore. But this first love is the love that teaches you about love, about commitment, about relationships, and a little bit about yourself. So that was my Jeff, my first love. My second love was in college. We met second semester, freshman year. I was 19, he was 18, and we dated, we moved in together, we planned a future together, we actually got engaged, and we broke up twice. Once I broke up with him because he cheated on me, and the second time I broke up with him because he cheated on me. But this was an 8.5 year relationship. I'm a serial monogamous. I have always liked being in relationships. Your second love is your teaching love, your learning love, your love relationship that gives you all the do's and don'ts, that tells you all of your tolerances, what you're willing to sacrifice, what you're not willing to sacrifice, what your boundaries are, and like me, if you live with a person, a glimpse into what your life would be like with this person if they were your forever person. I do not have a relationship with my second love. I know that he went to law school, became a lawyer. He lived in California for a while, but I don't really know anything about his life. I could probably find out if I wanted to, because who's not on social media? Well, my husband's not on social media, but I don't need to know. My relationship with John taught me a lot about myself. Mostly that I was not emotionally stable enough to demand to be treated with respect and dignity. After the end of my relationship with John, the real end, the final end, not the halfway ending, I spent a lot of time in therapy. I went through a few years of being literally, clinically depressed. Our relationship took us from Tucson, Arizona to New York City, and then my final escape when I left New York and drove to California, where I've lived for the last 33 years. Everything about that relationship with John that broke inside of me was healed 50% by my doing and 50% by the person I chose for my third and final forever love. In late August of 1992, some of my listeners weren't even born yet, I was introduced to the son of my department manager. I worked at the Estee Lauder counter at Macy's in Santa Rosa, and I was 29 years old. I wanted to be married. I wanted to be a mother. I didn't want to be out there going to clubs and dating around and sleeping around. I wanted to find my person. When I met my husband, he was charming, funny, athletic, brash, confident, and really, really cute. But he was the extreme opposite of anything I'd ever been attracted to in the past. He was short. He was a redhead. He was kind of pale. I had always been with tall, dark men. Although Jeff wasn't necessarily dark, but he was very tall. John was not super tall. He was 5'11", but he was dark, dark hair. He looked kind of European. But there was something about Boyd, and I just knew that he was potentially the one. We talked on the phone for a few weeks and then went on a first date on September 11th, 1992. And it was a really fun date, and he was really a polite gentleman, and I was so impressed. He didn't try to sleep with me on the first date. He was really respectful, and I remember walking in the house after my date and saying to my sisters, he literally kissed me on the cheek. Like, it was shocking for that day and age. Well, of course, it wasn't a smooth ride because I was part of the equation, and I ended up breaking up with Boyd right before Thanksgiving because, well, a lot of reasons. First of all, he was way too nice to me. So I was like, what's up with this guy? Where's all the games and all the pushing and pulling and, you know, not keeping your word? I wasn't used to that. So I was constantly trying to lure him into messing things up with me. He just wasn't playing that game. He literally said to me, I'm not into all these games. But we were driving one night. He was taking me home and he pulled the e-brake in his truck and it spun the truck 360 degrees in the middle of the road. And I went completely crazy. I literally broke up with him that night. It scared me so much, and it seemed like a red flag. Like, this guy's crazy, and maybe this is just an act, and he's too wild for me, and, you know, maybe not good husband material. And what am I thinking by rushing into this thing and trying to make it into something it's not? All the things. So here's the timeline. We meet in August, we started dating in September, and we're broken up by the end of November. Right before Christmas, maybe a week before Christmas, I wanted him back. Not because I wanted a Christmas present. I wrote him a long letter, and I went to his apartment, and I put it underneath the windshield wiper on his truck. Essentially, I was professing my love for him and begging for his forgiveness. He gave it to me, and it was everything you could imagine or anything you would see in a movie. The best love story. On March 3rd, 1993, Boyd asked me to marry him. I, of course, said yes, and we immediately started planning our wedding. We decided we were going to get married on the one-year anniversary of our first date, which, as it turns out, was going to be September 11th, 1993. Our little wedding favors were magnets, and the magnet said, 911, it's a love emergency. Isn't that so cute? Okay, so y'all can do the math and come up with the fact that this September, we're going to celebrate 32 years married and 33 years together. And he is my forever. I'm grateful to Jeff for being my first love. It helped me recognize the feeling when it happened again. I'm grateful to John for laying out the blueprint for what is unacceptable in a love relationship. He helped me define what I needed in my final and forever love. Of course, it's not been a bed of roses with Boyd. Not because there's anything wrong with me, obviously. But relationships are hard, and long relationships are harder, and love is a continuum. The minute it stops or stalls, it's hard to start it up again. If I were to have my husband on the show right now, he would say something like, the timing was right for both of us. We were both ready to get off the treadmill of dating and settle down. We wanted to plan our future together, and we did exactly that. I married a construction worker who became a contractor, and we built a life. I didn't marry a doctor, but I play one in real life. I didn't marry a lawyer, but I will argue my point to the end. The life I built with Boyd is strong, beautiful, and textured. I am right where I was meant to be, with the man I was meant to be with. He is the love of my life. He gave me two beautiful daughters. And no matter what our future brings, those two gifts and the past three decades of his love and devotion are enough. However, don't get any ideas, because at the end of the day, it's going to be much, much cheaper to keep her. And I'm the her. So there's my three loves. Now we're going to play some music. My song with Jeff is Reunited by Peaches and Herb. There was a moment there where we broke up, and when we got back together, it was like the heavens opened up. So we always played that song, Reunited by Peaches and Herb. So I'm going to cue it up. I had to download some of these songs because, obviously, who has Reunited in their playlist? Not me. So I'm going to play Reunited by Peaches and Herb. It's a 5-minute song, so, you know, talk amongst yourselves. And all right. okay, that's enough of that. I can only be reunited for so long, and then I'm like, I gotta go. Okay, my song with John was I Melt With You by Modern English. It was a really good song and super popular back in the day in the 80s when we were together. So I'm going to play that song too. It's not 5 minutes, so I think you're going to like it.
There's nothing you and I won't do. I'll stop the world and melt with you. Dream of better lives, the kind which never hate. Trapped in a state of imaginary grace. I made a pilgrimage to save.
Blah, blah, blah. He didn't stop the world. He didn't melt with me. All he did was be a butthole. Okay, so now we're going to play my wedding song, which is I Love the Way You Love Me by John Michael Montgomery. And I'm going to play this whole song all the way through. Get ready.
Like the feel of your name on my lips, and I like the sound of your sweet gentle kiss, the way that your fingers run through my hair, and how your scent lingers even when you're not there, and I like the way your eyes dance when you laugh. Everyone watching like we were insane. But I love the way you love me. Strong and wild, slow and easy, heart and soul, so slow.
song is the only detail that Boyd wanted any part in when we were planning the wedding. He said, I'm going to pick our first dance. So I guess he loves the way I love him. I love the way you love me. Yeah, whatever. You know what I'm saying. Okay, I'm going to do a little bit of business, and then we're going to dive into the chapter. First of all, I want to give a shout out to my dear friend, Chris Durrell. She needs our thoughts and directed prayers for her brother, John Anthony Romero, as he is facing a potential health crisis. And to Chris's mom, Lucille Romero Britton, as she supports her son on this health journey. I love you, Chris. Come home soon. I have a few things to read here. There's a bluegrass and folk festival coming up in Sonoma County on Saturday, March 8th, 2025. It's at the Sebastopol Community Cultural Center, which is on Morris Street. There's going to be lots of singers. The doors open at noon. Lori Lewis and Kathy Kalick, the Lonesome Ace String Band, Broken Compass Bluegrass, Manning Music Youth Bands, Late for the Train, Salty Sally, and Mission Blue. There's food and beverage concessions on site, and it's rain or shine. That's the Sonoma County Bluegrass and Folk Festival. Our first underwriter that I'm going to talk about today is Community Market of Sebastopol. KOWS Radio thanks Community Market of Sebastopol for their ongoing support. Community Market is a worker-run natural food store providing our community with organic food products since 1975. My friend Maureen would love this store. It's their mission to carry only the finest, most ethical, and nutritious products for the community. They're located at the Barlow, 6762 Sebastopol Avenue in Sebastopol. You can contact them by phone at 707-407-4020 or 4020 for people that don't like to say O as a number because it's not. Okay, here's a PSA. This PSA is for the annual return of the OCS's most popular performers, who will be visiting from his home in Ireland, world-renowned modern-day bard and premier Celtic harpist Patrick Ball, weaves the marvelous old Irish tales of wit and enchantment together with ethereally gorgeous Celtic harp melodies into a warm and magical theatrical performance that always leaves the audience spellbound. Tickets are available now for Saturday, March 15th at 7 p.m., and you can find out more by calling 707-874-9392 or visiting the OCA webpage, OccidentalCenterForTheArts.org. And I'm going to squeeze in one more thing, which is KOWS program promotion announcement. The Trip is your one-stop journey back to the most creative and innovative decade of the last century. The 1960s music scene was as rich and varied as the decade it defined. And it's an era that Gary Sherwood celebrates every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 here on KOWS. From the Sunset Strip to Haight-Ashbury, the Brill Building sound and the Greenwich Village folk movement, all the way to the brass and sass of Motown, Memphis, and the Liverpool and Manchester clubs that brought us the British wave, The Trip has it all. Ooh, I think my mother-in-law would love this show. Listen in on Saturdays from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on KOWS LP Occidental and always streaming online at KOWSFM.com. Okay. So, now for the good stuff. I mean, not that that wasn't good, because obviously that was great, but the rest of the show. Okay. The title of my memoir is Leveled. The full title is Leveled, a memoir by the numbers, because I have a whole thing with numbers. So every chapter has a number in the title. Today I'm going to read chapter 8, which is entitled 661. 661 is my firstborn daughter's birthday. June 6, 2001, when she was, I don't know, a few years old, let's say, I was at the drive-thru at the bank, and there was this sticker on the drive-thru little machine thing where you put the tube through to send your money in, and the sticker had the words S-I-X-S-I-X-O-N-E, 661, all one word. And I was like, that's so cool. That's Grace's birthday. So I immediately found out what it was. It's actually like a skateboarding or snowboarding company. I think it sells helmets. Anyways, and I should have looked it up today so I could not be saying I think, I don't know, but I didn't. So here we are. I ordered a bunch of stickers from the company and I was all in on the 661. So this chapter is about Grace. Here's the thing about writing this book. You know, I'm writing a bunch of stuff that's emotional and revealing. And now I'm going to read it aloud to you on the air. And I'm probably going to cry. No, I'm definitely going to cry. But I'm going to try to hold it together. I haven't even started. Okay. Chapter 8, 661. From the moment I peed on the stick, my heart was a flutter. Two previous miscarriages and a tubal pregnancy preceded this urination. Dressed as Cher for the Halloween party we were about to attend, only added to the weirdness in my gut. October 29th, 2000, at the age of 38, 7 years into my marriage, we got a yes. I was shaking as I skipped down the 16 stairs into my living room. My husband, dressed as Sonny Bono, looked stunned as he whipped his head around to face me. "Should we still go to the party?" he asked me quizzically. "Of course," I shouted too loudly. We both said in unison, "but we tell no one." We had been here before, spilling our secret only to have it end tragically. As we jumped into the car, my mind was jumbled with equal amounts of excitement and fear. By the time we get to the party, my voice was off kilter, kind of like right now. My hand unconsciously goes to my stomach too much, and everyone wants to know why I'm not drinking. I quickly concocted a story about a new medicine I'm taking and how I need to abstain from alcohol. It sounds exactly like the lie that it is. I am giddy and I keep making eye contact with my husband as we relish in our happiness secret. The party seems to last forever and I feel anxious to leave. As we say our goodbyes, a casual acquaintance says to me, "Are you pregnant?" My eyes widen as I snap an unconvincing, "No." I am the healthiest I have been in years, decades even. My rheumatologist explains that my pregnant body is now producing a hormone that sends my RA into remission. Why haven't I been having babies nonstop for the last 20 years, I wonder? At the almost 3-month mark, also known as Christmas Eve, we tell everyone our news. Grace Catherine, if it's a girl, or Cole Jennings, if it's a boy, is due July 7th, 2001. Since I was an older mother-to-be with the added bounty of the autoimmune disease, rheumatoid arthritis, I'm immediately categorized as high risk. I do everything right. I get the sample of the fetal tissue taken at UCSF. I eat a healthy diet. I chronicle my growing belly, abstain from alcohol, plan my future. Our business is growing by leaps and bounds, and because we aren't busy enough, we've decided to sell our house and move before our daughter arrives. Best laid plans. Our house sells in 72 hours, well over the asking price, with a 30-day close, and we have nowhere to go. The next 5 months finds us moving out to the coast into a rental house, me getting pulled over for speeding on the 2-lane highway with an empty beer can in my glove box that fell to the floorboard when I opened it to get my insurance and registration out. Thanks to my husband, who put the empty beer can there as he was washing my car. He did not get thanked for that. A hospitalization for pneumonia and purchasing a new home. Grace Catherine Stockham had her own agenda. She made her debut on June 6th, 2001, after a 24-hour induced labor at a tiny 5 pounds, 10 ounces, she was positively perfect. We had no idea how to behave. I was so overjoyed. I just followed my instincts. Ironically, I wasn't scared at all. My husband was a wreck. Grace was not a great sleeper or a great eater. I called her the snacker and the catnapper. She vomited a lot, several times a day. And by the time she was 5 months old, I noticed a weird sound she would make before the projectile vomiting. It was almost a grunt. And then she would bend her tiny body forward in a lurch, grunt, and breathe deeply, then puke her guts out. I took her to the pediatrician, but my regular doctor wasn't available, so we saw another doctor, and he diagnosed her with GERD. She was almost 6 months old. After a week or so on the medicine, she wasn't getting any better, and I decided to videotape one of these episodes so I could show her doctor. I didn't know what it was, but I had a nagging feeling it wasn't GERD. As I sat in the treatment room waiting for our beloved doctor, Grace stared up at me and smiled. I made a mental note to record this in her baby book. First genuine smile. Dr. Prosser, our pediatrician, listened to my story about Grace's situation. I proudly announced that I had a video of an episode. As I watched him look at the tape and then watch it again and then again, my face felt flush. My hands began to tremble. Dr. Prosser walked over to me, put his hand on my shoulder, and said, "Danny, this is a seizure. Grace is having seizures. You may have just saved her life by videotaping this episode." The next 30 minutes spin in slow motion and double time in cadence with my heartbeat. My emotional mind slid into operational mode. Call Boyd. Call my sister. Go over to the hospital, wait for instructions. Kiss my baby. Kiss my baby. Don't cry. Kiss my baby. Boyd is ashen. I am a pillar of strength and composure. We deny the initial diagnosis while we make a pact to do whatever we need to do for our firstborn daughter. If that means she never progresses past this stage of development, so be it. We are Team Stockholm. We got this. The doctors tell us that we need to go down to Stanford Children's Hospital. So Boyd and I make the drive. We make plans, we make promises and predictions. I ask the unanswerable question, why God? Why us? Grace is admitted to the hospital. I stay in the room with her over the protestations of the nursing staff. Just try to make me leave, I say defiantly. Boyd gets a hotel room and we wait. Together, yet apart. I pace the floor, summoning all my dormant Catholic girl prayers, and I make promises and offer bargains if we can just get some good news. The next morning, our tiny 6-month-old baby is sedated and wheeled into the MRI suite. Boyd and I go into the suite, and I refuse earplugs. I want to be present. I want to be vigilant. I want to channel my own strength into my child. 20 minutes and a lifetime later, my husband and I sit side by side on uncomfortable hospital chairs. Across from us sits Dr. Jin Han, the preeminent pediatric neurologist, and Grace is next to us in a crib hooked up to that beeping EEG monitor. Dr. Han is slight of build with a placid calmness to his face. He says, I have good news and not so good news. I whisper, give us the good news second. He continues, Grace has had a stroke. Based on the MRI, it looks like it occurred at 5 months gestation. Her seizures are a result of this stroke. I shout way too loudly for the room we're in, what the F is the good news? He turns to me and says, the good news is the damage is done. Although 40% of her brain is affected, it won't do any more damage. Boyd says, deadpan. I have 100 construction workers who work for me right now who are only using 20% of their brains. So you're right. This is good news. This exchange washes me in a combination of relief. Okay, she's all right. Guilt. I was in the hospital with pneumonia at 5 months gestation. Is this my fault? Sadness. What is her future now? Is she going to have epilepsy and seizures the rest of her life? Anxiety. How will we get through this? And a sliver of hope. Because all we have is hope. Within 6 months, Grace's seizures have stopped. An experimental drug, too costly to imagine, stopped her seizures. Grace is paralyzed on her right side. Her hand is fisted and her leg is weak, but she is perfect. I am pregnant again. Our business partners have embezzled an enormous amount of our fortune, and we are teetering on financial ruin, but we battle on. On June 6, 2002, while 6.5 months pregnant with our second daughter, Leah Jane, Grace turns 1 year old. She doesn't walk. She can't really talk. And that fisted right hand smells like sweaty gym socks most of the time. But she's not having seizures, and she knows a bit of sign language, and she's incredibly happy. We count our blessings and speak passionately about the brilliant doctors who saved our girl. The business is going to be fine, and we have hope. Leveled by a diagnosis, buoyed by our family and our faith, our girls are thriving. As cliche as you can imagine, our heart song is, I Got You, Babe, by Sonny and Cher. There's a picture of us that night in costume, and the caption said, we got a yes, babe. My girls know the story of that night, and it still catches in my throat when I retell it. That picture actually burned in the fire when our house burned down, but I think there's a copy of it somewhere. The lyrics are, then put your tiny hand in mine. There ain't no hill or mountain we can't climb. Babe, I got you, babe. I got you to hold me tight. I got you, I won't let go. I got you to love me so. I got you, babe. On the 6-year anniversary of Grace's diagnosis, my husband got a tattoo on his right shoulder. It's the letters SIXSIXONE 661. On his left shoulder, he has TEN, the number 9, TWO for Leah's birthday, October 9th, 2002, 1092. Okay. Come on, you didn't think I was going to get through that without crying, did you? I'm a mess. A few months ago, I read Cher's memoir, and she talked about that song, I Got You, Babe, and how it was written and what it meant to her and Sonny and all of that, and it was just a great song. I mean, the lyrics are really simple, but wow, so impactful. So, as you know, I'm going to play I Got You, Babe by Sonny and Cher. I'm going to wipe my tears and get my act together because there's still more to talk about. We got 15 minutes. So here's I Got You, Babe by Sonny and Cher.
Got me, baby, I got you.
Okay, I think I'm okay now. So writing a memoir is so revealing. You have to be so vulnerable to tell the truth, the whole truth. And a lot of truths from my life are truths about trauma, truths about sadness, truths about loss, and maybe surviving all of the things that I survived before my husband and since my husband have all contributed to my desire to offer myself up to the criticism that naturally comes with revealing your truth in a public forum. While I sit here in the radio studio and read the chapter of my book that I just shared with you, I feel empowered. I think writing my memoir is part of my wellness journey. It has allowed me to retell stories in a way that opens me up for healing. I hope in the end, once the book is published and that people who read it, they can start their own wellness journey, healing journey. Writing this book has not given me a six-pack, but the muscles that I'm flexing when I reveal my life to the public are muscles that my daughters can see, and they're muscles that make me proud and hopefully will make them proud to be a part of me. So this is Level Up with Dani, and I'm going to be back on the air March 6th with another episode. Who knows, maybe another chapter. Although my plan is for my next show to be about autoimmune diseases, so I don't know if I'll have time to read a chapter. But if I do read a chapter, it's going to be chapter 3, which is entitled 15-Year-Old Me. And it's a letter that I wrote to my 15-year-old self because I was 15 when I got diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. And I wish I would have known then what I know now. But that's kind of the opposite of living a life, and I'm not here for that. So the other night, Boyd and I watched Sly and the Family Stone documentary on Hulu, and it's really interesting if you want to watch it. But one of the things about the documentary is we just love listening to all the songs, and one of Boyd's absolute all-time favorite songs is a song by Sly and the Family Stone. It's called Life. So I'm going to play that song, and then I'll come back with my final song and a few parting words. So let me play Life by Sly and the Family Stone. Okay, so that was Sly and the Family Stone with Life. Sorry I was so emotional, but it was emotional stuff. I realized when I was getting ready to do the show that there's an entire group of people who are in my life today who don't know anything about my past before Boyd. And then there's an entire group of people who knew me when I was with Jeff or when I was with John and still know me now, but maybe didn't know that whole story about Grace. So in both writing the book and doing this radio show, I'm sharing parts of my life with all of my friend groups. And that's kind of really cool. We're getting to the end of my Carrie Underwood boycott, and all you Carrie Underwood lovers are going to be so happy because I think American Idol starts, I don't know, in 2 weeks. But I do have another Bailey Zimmerman song to play to end the show. It's called Never Leave, and Bailey's going to take us out. But I just want to thank everyone for listening. You're listening to my show means a lot to me. And, you know, those of you that listen to the archive version, which will be up tomorrow, and all of my shameless plugging on social media, it just, I really do appreciate all of it. And community radio is important. The many, many, many DJs on this radio station, I mean, sometimes I just go to the website and just, I'm just shocked at all the different shows that are available on KOWS LP 92.5 FM from Occidental, California, and streaming on the web at kowsfm.com. Just kind of browse around. I mean, there's so many good shows with a lot of good public interest and things that you might be interested in, and it's kind of fun to listen to shows other than mine, which I'm happy to allow you to do as long as you don't stop listening to mine. So let's see, I'm going to cue up Bailey Zimmerman. It's Never Leave by Bailey Zimmerman, and he's going to take us home. I'll be back on March 6th. Maybe it's a show about autoimmune diseases. Maybe it's just another chapter from the book. Time will tell. All right, thanks, guys. I super appreciate it. This is Level Up with Danny, and I'm your host, Danny Stockham. I'll fight.
Don't you want to stay? Don't just walk away from the memories. And I can't promise nothing but the rest of me. I'll fight for you. I'll fight for us. I'll fight to never leave. Never leave. Never leave. Never
leave. Okay, I've got 1 minute. So I just wanted to come back on and say, wow, all the songs I played today. I mean, I've heard that Bailey Zimmerman song, but I didn't realize how apropos it was for today's show. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. I'll have my playlist posted on social media once I get home today. I'm going to meet with my friend. Her daughter's getting married in May, and we're planning the bridal shower. So exciting. So we just turn the page. That's what we do. We just keep turning the page, keep moving forward, keep living our best life. Okay, until next time. Bye.